We are Radio Catskill.
From Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the local edition. I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me tonight. Well, Cornell Cooperative Extension in Orange and Sullivan Counties has a parenting workshop coming up, virtual parenting workshops. Patricio Rabayo has all the details on that coming up in the second half of the program. But first, we've got some local news to get to, including updates on some ongoing stories. And for that, we turn to the River Reporter's own Ruby Rayner. Ruby, welcome back to the local edition.
It's good to be back. Thanks.
So let's start with a follow-up on a story we were talking about last week. The last time we talked about, you were going over a Coshecton oil and propane tanker that flipped over in late November, creating basically a one-truck, 1,000-gallon oil spill. But you've got some more details and an update on this. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. And just for a little bit more context on that review, the Department of Environmental Conservation had reported that the tanker left between 1,000 and 1,500 gallons of fuel oil on the road and adjacent wetlands, which, according to Sullivan County 2024 spill records, was the largest fuel spill by a pretty significant amount in 2024. And the biggest concern, you know, typically when there's any oil spill at all is water contamination. And this spill is, you know, less than a mile from a couple of different water bodies, like the Lake Huntington. It's, you know, around 5 miles from the Delaware River. And then it's also just near a bunch of smaller streams, lakes, and ponds. And so one of the questions that was important to try to address from the DEC was, you know, what are the mitigation efforts and what they're seeing in terms of potential contamination? And the DEC told the River Reporter on December 18th that spill response experts at that time had determined that there had been no impacts that had reached the 10 Mile River and the Delaware River. But as far as like a couple of days ago, there's still a boom present, which is one of the things that the DEC has been employing as a means to mitigate the effects of the oil spill.
Just explain to us, if you could, what's a boom, and they're still working on this? Is that the case?
Yeah, that is the case. This use of a boom is one of the ways they are still working on this. So a boom is this floating barrier it's typically made of like plastic or metal, and it has a anchor or a landline so that it can keep it in place. And it's used to contain or slow the spread of oil and makes it easier to recover oil after a spill. And there's a picture attached, so you can see the actual boom that's being used that was taken a couple of days ago at the site at theriverreporter.com. But generally, booms are used until the majority of an oil spill is contained or recovered, and they're supposed to be deployed until the oil slicks or that visible oil on a surface is significantly reduced and no longer poses a major threat to the environment. And the amount of time that a boom is deployed and changed out is usually varies depending on the size and the severity of a spill. So the fact that the boom is still deployed now 52 days after, which is, you know, nearly 2 months, indicates that the majority of the spill has not yet been contained or recovered and that these efforts are still ongoing. And the DEC doesn't, as an entity, categorize or provide information on the scale of an oil spill, so they don't offer, it's not part of their procedure to offer context in terms of this is this type of oil spill, it's this big, and that means XYZ. But the long length of time that the boom has been deployed indicates that the spill has some significance in size because, you know, smaller spills, a boom will be there for just a couple of days, and it has been, nearly 2 months that it's been they're still using a boom to mitigate the effects of the spill.
What about the folks living there? Have you been hearing? I know that, you know, the River Reporter heard from people. That's why you looked back into this, because people had questions. Are there neighbors there that are being affected by this?
I spoke with one person who lives pretty close to where the spill occurred. And they said, like, reading the article was the first time that they had heard about it, but that they had smelled something and they had seen the boom and they had wondered kind of what exactly was going on, but that they hadn't received any notice from the town of Coshocton. And, you know, they expressed that they thought Coshocton Oil and Propane, the company that owned the tanker that flipped, you know, should have notified the town or the community directly in some capacity about this spill. And that the town hasn't mentioned this spill at any board meeting or posted any public notices as of yet. And this neighbor to the spill said that they were worried, that they had worries about water contamination, and pointed out that no one had contacted them or come to test their water, and that they were especially concerned because they all share an aquifer. So if there was to be contamination, that would then affect, you know, a large portion of Lake Huntington's water supply that share that same source.
Okay, well, thank you for that update. Now let's check in with some of your beat reporting. I know that you stay on tabs for what's happening in the town of Highland. You follow their meetings. It's a new year. How are they doing out there in Highland? What's going on?
Yeah, so there was some commotion at last week's public hearing, which was regarding the town's purchase of a new property. The Sullivan County Sheriff's deputy who was at the meeting, they've had a deputy there to, in case of anything, since late last year, that deputy had to intervene in a pretty heated argument between the town's supervisor, John Pizzolatto's husband, Roswell Hamrick, and one of the council members, Caitlin Hoss's mother, Mel Carney. The public hearing was about Highland's purchase of a building right next to Town Hall. So it's 564 State Route 55. It's right adjacent. And the argument began after Carney had objected to the town's purchase during the public comment portion of the hearing.
What was the nature of the comment and why did it escalate?
Yeah, so Carney, the mother of board member Caitlin Hoss, made a public comment, you know, speaking against the purchase, and the supervisor responded that her comment was, you know, full of lies. And then Carney reacted by asking if the supervisor was calling her a liar, and he doubled down on that. And that's when the attorney kind of interjected and asked for a 2-minute adjournment and to speak with just the supervisor outside of the hearing room. And so then they left, and that's when the supervisor's husband, Roswell Hamrick, and Mel Carney began a separate kind of back and forth. Carney was, you know, making allegations about unpaid taxes by the supervisor. And Hamrick was saying that was, you know, none of her business and untrue. And so the two were kind of inching closer and closer to each other. And that's when the sheriff kind of came in and put his hand, you know, very gently on Carney's shoulder and urged her back and stood in between them. And then the supervisor and attorney kind of reentered and re-adjourned the meeting, and things continued on. But there was definitely, you know, people were standing and kind of moving closer to one another, which the Sullivan County Sheriff's Office commented on it, saying that, you know, the deputy felt that it was in the best interest with what he felt was going on to kind of make sure that he was in between the two.
Right. Well, it sounds like there might be more to this than the issue at hand, given all the history of conflict there in Town Highland. But what about the issue at hand? What about this purchase?
Specifically in regards to this purchase, it began in December when the supervisor announced that the town had placed, you know, a refundable deposit on the property. And the property was listed on like a real estate site for $99,000 as of late November. And the town board said that they had negotiated the price down to $78,000. And that's when Mel Carney first kind of alluded that the real estate agent being a friend of the supervisors and raising the property's price prior to the town closing on the purchase. And at that same meeting, the supervisor said that he has no personal connection to the Realty Group and that that was untrue. But looking at some records, just in kind of looking at this information, the property was sold in 2017 for $15,000 and then just recently in July of 2024 to the current owner, Sal Martorano, for $27,500. So they're buying it at $78,000. And the county assessed the property at $29,000 in 2023 and 2024. So the price of $70,000 is significantly higher. You know, that doesn't necessarily mean anything, but I think that that was where some of the original confusion came from. And just yesterday, now to just kind of bring this full circle, the town board did vote to purchase the property for $78,000, and they got it appraised separately, and the appraisal was for $85,000. So the purchase price was less than what the town had the property appraised for.
Okay. There's a lot of numbers there and there's a lot of money, and it sounds like I'm hearing about two different appraisals. Is that the case?
Yeah. So the county assesses all properties for taxable purposes.
Okay. Yeah.
And that $29,000 in 2023 and 2024 is the county's assessment. And then the appraisal that the town received prior to voting on the purchase was a separate independent appraisal, which takes into consideration other factors. And that was for $85,000.
Okay. And now an update on another story, switching gears here, just reminding people that there was this fire that you reported on back in October. And, you know, you have an update on this one. This is a local fire in Coshecton, and the homeowner thought it was arson. Of course, we didn't have many details at the time because law enforcement was investigating. They don't say much when they're investigating. But now you've heard something from there's both been a police investigation and a fire investigation. What can you tell us? What's the update on this fire?
Yeah, so Floria Vladu, who was the homeowner and alone during the fire, had, you know, said that she heard footsteps and that she saw flashlights and suspected that somebody had poured something and set fire to the house. The fire investigation, however, has determined no cause of the fire. So the Sullivan County fire investigation said that they weren't able to provide a hypothesis for even a cause because of how much had been destroyed in the fire. And the Sullivan County Sheriff's investigation report said that they were unable to substantiate Floria's belief that multiple unidentified suspects entered her home and set fire to her home. And also cited for that conclusion a lack of video evidence and witnesses. So both of these conclusions were made with little evidence in terms of the fire investigation because of how destructive the actual fire was. And in terms of the sheriff's investigation, because of the lack of evidence that they had in order to investigate the claim. And then in discussing the results of the police investigation, which were available prior to the fire investigation with Floria, she maintains her story that she believes that there was people who entered her house and that were a part of setting the fire.
Okay, well, it's a shame that they weren't able to find things out more definitively for her. Did you happen to find out, do you have any update on how she's doing and if she found a place to land? Is everything okay in her world?
Yeah, so her husband, who was away in Romania, where both of them are from, he came back shortly after the fire happened, and they are as of a couple weeks ago, we're living in a trailer on their property. And I have spoken with her granddaughter, and she said that, you know, she's talking with them about, you know, going through all of the proper procedures for getting insurance claims in order and stuff like that. And I think they're still kind of figuring it out, as it obviously was a hugely traumatic event for them. So, but they are okay. and are keeping on, keeping on.
All right. Thank you for that update. Believe it or not, Ruby, we don't have any more time left, so we're going to have to leave any other news that we got for another day. But if people want to find out the other news that you've got, it's all up there at riverreporter.com, as well as the stories that we've gone over, riverreporter.com. Ruby Rainer, thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Susan Sussman, human development educator for Cornell Cooperative Extension, tells us about their upcoming virtual parenting workshops. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Capping a five-decade career in politics, President Joe Biden will give a farewell address to the nation tonight from the Oval Office. Join us for NPR News special coverage tonight at 8 on Radio Catskill.
But then, Reed, who's a relatively soft-spoken guy, he just launches into this extraordinarily harsh assessment of Pete Hegseth's qualifications. It's a total takedown.
I'm Michael Barbaro. That's Today on The Daily from The New York Times.
It's The Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole. They say parenting is one of life's most rewarding roles, but it can also be one of the most difficult, one of the most challenging, as parents and caregivers juggle responsibilities at home, work, and their communities. Finding support and guidance is more important than ever. That's why Cornell Cooperative Extension of Orange and Sullivan Counties have virtual parenting workshops coming up. And these programs are trying to provide practical tools and strategies to help parents navigate the complexities of raising children while fostering a healthy and connected family dynamic. Radio Catskill's Patricio Rubio spoke with Susan Sussman, human development educator for Cornell Cooperative Extension, Orange and Sullivan Counties, about the classes and how you can get involved.
A majority of our programs are virtual, and the reason for the virtual is it all started in COVID, of course, yet we have found that it really gives opportunities for people that can't get to in-person training. So it removes barriers in the sense of having to drive somewhere, having to get a babysitter. So we have found that virtual programming actually really works well. So we have our foundational programs that we've been doing for many years and just updating as it goes along to really help parents with young children. Then we have programs for teenage parents of teenagers. And then we really felt that connection was critical, especially after COVID, to really try to build on building connection, not only with your kids, but other adults as well as yourself. We're always trying to find programming and develop programming that's really pertinent and critical for to support parents and caregivers.
And I see that this, the first one is coming up is the self-care, self-connection one. Why is this so important for parents and to have self-care? Because I'm a fairly new parent. I'm a parent of a five-year-old. And okay. Sometimes I can definitely understand that you're so wrapped up in school, what happens to school, what happens if they're eating and make sure they're happy. You forget about yourself. I guess that's what happens.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, I used to pride myself on being last on my list, and shame on me. The thing is that we really can't give from an empty cup, and it's really important for us to take care of ourselves, even if it's just a little bit, even if it's just taking deep breaths. But it's critical for our children to see us practice self-care so that they can learn that this is something good for them. So, you know, you probably know that there's a lot of youth out there that are suffering from anxiety. And so if we can teach them early on how to take care of themselves and how to regulate their emotions, and we do that by demonstrating that for them. So it's really important that we practice self-care.
I said, being a parent, I really noticed how much my daughter mimics her parents, us, and so I can definitely see that if you're showing great examples of how you are self-caring, how you're dealing with emotions and things that come at you, pass on.
Yeah. And the thing too is we have such a power to regulate their emotions when we regulate our emotions. So that's another whole part of this program. It's only a 90-minute session, but it really is powerful in the sense of explaining to parents that you really do impact them by your own behavior.
Right. And so the self-care one is happening on January 23rd, starts at 11 o'clock. And so the other one that's coming up in February is Unpacking the Teen Years, which happens a couple of sessions here, February 5th, 12th, 19th, and 26th.
Correct. From 7 to 9 p.m. And this is a series, and we really focus on ways to build connection and develop a healthy relationship with your teen. We go from the approach of sometimes people dread the teen years and they really are like, but we really go from an approach of there's really wonderful things happening with our teens and they're growing so much intellectually, cognitively, and just they are just so interested and want to learn about their world around them, learn about themselves. So we go from a really positive approach, but then really focus on what do kids really want? What's the best way to engage with them? How much do we take in or not take personally in the sense from them? If they're pushing away, that's totally normal. That's what they do. And so we remind parents of what's really going on. And then we talk about red flags. So what should we be looking for in the teen years that really are red flags? And what are things that we can say, hey, you know what? Let them dye their hair purple. Pick your battles. So it's a great program. It really is. It really helps parents understand teens from a positive perspective.
Oh, what kind of feedback have you received from parents? Like, this is the first time you've done a program like this, or you have done this in the past?
No, we've been doing this one for years too. And I've also integrated in a lot of really fun videos and different things to really make it more engaging. And but yeah, we've been doing it with different names throughout the years. But yeah, so this one is not new, but it's just been keeps being revamped.
Well, it definitely has to, because technology now with the teens are facing now with technology, social media, is always being connected. Obviously, when I grew up as a teenager, you just didn't have that. And I think about my daughter when she grows up, what she will be facing, even with social media, or I don't know what at that time, what will be there. So it's definitely a wholly different dynamic when it comes to, say, peer pressure and bullying. Those topics have always been there, but it just seems like social media and being connected to technology has elevated that to a sort of different level.
Yeah. And we talk a lot about, again, it's all about communication, talking to your kids, having an open door relationship, trying to judge less, working with them to teach them and educate them so that they can start to build that information in their own brain so that they can self-regulate, because you can't force them to do things. It's really, it has to be their own choice. So we really do anything, whether it's substance use, whether it's technology, whatever. It's again, all about building relationship, connection, communication.
And the other session is having in spring is called Discipline is Not a Dirty Word. It starts also a multi-session talk here. You have March 6th, 13th, 20th, and 27th. Starts at 7 p.m. Here's the game tools for understanding this child development and parental coaching.
Yeah. So this is our, like, I call it our flagship or foundational program. This is the program that we've been doing forever at Cornell Cooperative Extension. And it's, again, also been revamped through the years and we've added different things to it. But the information is tried and true. And even the current people out there talking about parenting, all the stuff that we've been teaching for years is really important stuff that we've continued to teach. It's also a great program. It's designed primarily for parents of 2 to 10. But again, if like somebody missed the teen program and wanted to come to the discipline program, they can take a lot of information from the discipline program for their teens. So it's a great program that really teaches us about ages and stages of development, temperament, empathy, communication. We give them 5 different tools and tricks that really help them understand different ways that they can approach their kids so that their kids will listen. We try to help parents understand why kids behave the way they do. We talk about how do you correct your kids and what are the pros and cons of those. So it's a very both the teen program and this program are very interactive, and I give parents the opportunity to really talk and chat and share. And my approach when I teach is really trying to help parents feel really comfortable in the space so that they feel that they can ask questions, that they're not going to be judged by me. I share many of the mistakes that I've made along the way as a parent so that they can feel comfortable in the room, that we're all human beings, where nobody's perfect. There's no such thing as a perfect parent. And we allow for a lot of opportunity for conversation.
Now, I see the offerings also have a fee to it. It has a family fee. Are for like Unpacking the Teen Years, but Discipline is Not a Dirty Word, are you also encouraging the whole family to attend, or this is just really for or the parents or guardians of the person?
Yeah, it's traditionally anyone that is parenting or caregiving. So I've had parents like a mom and a grandmom. I've had a mom and dad. I've had mom and mom. Like I've had, so anyone that's involved in the parenting of the child, these are strictly designed for the adults. And all of them have a fee, but there's also the opportunity when they register that they can select no fee. So it's strictly given, gives everybody the opportunity to participate. We certainly welcome payment, but certainly if somebody can't, then we still want them to come.
Right. If anyone's interested in attending these, where can they go to get more information? Where can they go to sign up?
It's so Orange County. And then also, obviously, this is the Sullivan, you know, I work for Sullivan County as well, but I'm based out of the Orange County Extension Office. So that's where everything is on our website at cceorangecounty.org. And if you go to the events page, you can just scroll down and you'll see the different names on our events page. And on each event is an actual link to every program to register. We do have one more program that we're scheduling for in April, and that's called Adult Connection. And this is a new program. This is one of my newer ones. And the reason why I developed it is I felt that it's really important for us to demonstrate to our kids how adults relate to one another. If we're yelling and screaming at our significant other, that certainly does impact our children. So I felt that it would be helpful to teach adults, you know, different ways that they can relate to one another and realize the value of taking deep breaths with each other as well, or realizing that when I feel threat, I might fight, flight, or freeze, right? And so when I do that, I'm not necessarily reacting in my best way. Just bringing attention to that to adults and helping them realize that it's really important for them to be better at the way that they communicate, because our kids, like you said, are always watching us.
Yes, and the positive example, you're absolutely right. Yeah, actually, that answers my next question I was going to ask is, are there any plans to expand workshops or include additional topics in the future?
We always do. We're pretty, you know, have a pulse on a lot of things that are going on. In fact, the Orange County Parenting Coalition, which is a quarterly program that we put on for professionals generally, but we always invite parents, but parents don't always attend. We have an upcoming program. For the first time, we're like trying to really solicit parents to participate, and certainly Sullivan parents could participate as well. It's January 30th. From 12 to 1:30, and it's called Harnessing the Green. And so what it's really talking about is we're really looking at ways to get kids off screens and get out there, enjoy nature and the environment. And so we are going to be really talking about how do you actually do this besides ripping this iPad or whatever from them? How can we go about doing that? And we're also going to be discussing what other countries are doing with this problem that we're facing with our kids being so addicted to screens. So it's going to be a roundtable kind of discussion and giving people the opportunity to share ideas, but we're also going to give them a takeaway flyer with information as well. If they're interested in that, should also be on our page. And if not, they can always email me at sls536@cornell.edu. So if for anything, if they have any questions about any of these programs, they can email me directly.
We were talking to Susan Sussman, Human Development and Virtual In-Person Facilitator for Cornell Cooperative Extension. Thank you so much for talking to us about these topics that are going to be presented by Cornell Extension, because I think it's important. As a parent myself, you have these questions. Sometimes you're afraid to ask someone or expected to know these things, but it's great that there is a place that you can go to get your questions answered.
Yeah, thank you. And it's a safe space, and I just love what I do. I welcome everyone to come join me.
In Liberty, I'm Patricio Robayo for Radio Catskill.
Thank you, Patricio. Again, you can find out about those classes on Sullivan County Cornell Cooperative Extension website. That's sullivancce.org, sullivancce.org. And that's it for the local edition. I'm Jason Dole. I'll be back here tomorrow night. We'll be talking to Philip Pantuso, getting the latest news from him. For now, remember, coming up at 8 o'clock, we've got special programming, live coverage from NPR of President Biden's address tonight. He's addressing a nation at 8 o'clock. We'll be bringing that to you live at 8 o'clock after an hour of the Retro Cocktail Hour. For now, stay with us. It's The Daily. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Conover Club Restaurant, located at the intersection of Roscoe, Livingston Manor, Jeffersonville, and Calicoon. Featuring seasonal menus highlighting locally sourced ingredients. Menus, hours, reservations, and events at conoverclub.com. From The River Reporter, the community newspaper covering four counties in Pennsylvania and New York along the Upper Delaware River, riverreporter.com. And from listeners like you.